Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, John Yoder.
Hello, Janessa.
Greetings. Could you please open the show while I do my own intro in the bathroom?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll be back in 30 seconds.
Cool. Well, while you drop the hammer, it's a wonderful Wednesday. It's Thanksgiving time, and greetings to the world. I hope you're all having a great time. There's always something to be thankful for. Just the fact that you can hear, or that you have access to a phone or a computer, or have life, have breath, have consciousness. It's a beautiful thing. And so I hope all of you just will take the time to be thankful to God that for life. And it's a beautiful thing. Today's subject, I guess, will kind of be a situation where people aren't so grateful. That's in regards to the Ferguson situation where I believe it was a 14-year-old kid was shot and killed. The police, and he did it, as we've probably heard a million times, everyone feels it was an unwarranted killing. Of course, there are those who will also favor the police trying to protect and serve and yet also live. And it's one of those situations where there's really no winners, no matter what you say or do. It's just a bad situation. And then you have people protesting, I guess, the decision that the policeman was cleared as innocent in his actions. And so now people are taking it as an excuse to burn and loot the city. And you always get this kind of deal where people are upset against an injustice that they feel is out there. So they resort to basically creating more injustice. And I never quite understood it. I mean, I can see their frustration, but it seems like you could do something a little more constructive.
Thy holy hammer was putting a fire out.
Wow. The hammer has returned.
Thy holy hammer does not have an astute alarm clock.
I was wondering because I thought maybe I had missed a schedule or a deadline because I went to the airwaves, searched the Blog Talk Network, and it was just, elevator music playing, which was kind of cool elevator music, but nevertheless, I thought I maybe had missed the detail. So how
miss the detail. So anyway, did you know L.A. Down by 7th and Flower is pretty rough too, and yesterday they blocked a train in L.A. I think it must have been like a red or blue line or something.
Really?
Tonight
yeah,
they were jaunting at police with words and spit.
Wow. Well, there are people upset, and I can totally understand their position. I mean, you don't want the police a police state where everyone, where they're taking the law outside of the boundaries that are there for them, definitely. You don't want the police just calling their own shots. It's not Mexico, but it's such a fine line. Being a cop, I mean, what do you do? Because everything you do, people are looking at and judging, and if you make a mistake, there's no mercy, it seems like.
Well, I have two things to mention, and then I'll get back to the Michael Brown. First of all, New York had a 23 to 30 mile march. My friend A.B. Fofana moved there. He lives in Brooklyn, and I guess they marched 30 miles, and the cops followed them the whole way, but it was peaceful. Now, it seems like in L.A. everything's rougher. There's always, even like when the Lakers win and when it's a happy event, things are rougher there. They should not have burned down all those buildings. However, I did want to add that I felt like Obama gave a rather stale reply. They say he's professorial. He just said, those are criminal acts. These things should not be done. Those are criminal acts, burning down things. And, you know, like, even my white boss yesterday said he's our first black president. And he's very noble when he's running for office, giving powerful speeches, but he's not doing anything to bring the country together. He's not seizing his moment of truth. Go ahead. That's all I had to say.
I guess it's such a, like I say, it's one of those angles. What really complicates it is, from what I understand, Michael Brown wasn't a Boy Scout, and he wasn't in a good place to be. He wasn't doing a good thing. So it's really hard to get on the holy horse, forget the holy hammer, riding the holy horse of judgment. You know, you kind of want to say, if you're going to, and same thing with Rodney King, like, if you're going to make a big stand, do it over some really innocent Boy Scout that, got totally ripped off. But I have a hard issue with this one. You know, I really do. You know, when you make
well, I guess
case,
I thought of two alternatives. The cop, if you saw the cop being interviewed in the last 2 days, he said he was scared and Michael Brown had a devilish look on his face, like a very evil, mean look every time he approached him, like a scary evil. And the fact is that if the cop was that scared, he could have circled the block once or twice waiting for backup. He could have. He was in a squad car. He could have hit his pedal to the metal. And secondly, this is how I sketchily think it happened. The first 4 weeks of the case, nobody heard the cop side. They only heard Dorian Johnson's side, the witness, that he had his hands up, and by the fourth bullet, he was executed, basically. But it seems to me that this kid, he stole cigars and some kind of cherry Twizzlers of some sort. So he left the store. He was halfway back to his neighborhood on foot in the street. Why was there only one cop to begin with? There's always usually two. And Michael Brown was unarmed, even though both of these men stood around 6'2". So no one even really knows what the beginning of the confrontation was all about.
Right.
You?
Well, I guess a couple things come to mind. One is, obviously the people there have had a history of some kind of, whether it's abuse or just bad PR with the police. Like, people wouldn't be so mad if this was the first time. There's obviously been times where the police have come in there. They've been rough on some innocent people as well as guilty people. So there's this ill will, and people are just looking for the excuse to kind of punch back. Going on the other angle, you do have someone, this isn't a 4'10", 10-year-old kid with bubble gum in his pockets, and we're talking, if he's 6'2", well, anything over, 5'10", a cop is going to be on the edge anyway. It's not like in the middle of the day. It's at night. And I have a feeling it's like this. We all have a protocol what we're supposed to do on the job, what time to show up to work, where to sit, how to answer the phone. And we do our jobs, 90% of the time. But there's 5 or 10 or 20% of the time where we don't. We roll a stop sign. We don't answer the phone correctly after one ring. We let it ring 5 times because we're busy talking with a coworker. And I just think it's probably one of these cases, maybe he slipped with his protocol and things got out of control. I don't think a cop runs around and just starts shooting people for no reason. You've got to be
well,
on the
I
edge
think
to pull that gun.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
So
those last four
he,
bullets was out of spite, in my opinion. Now, Nancy Grace is she used to be, do you ever watch Nancy Grace?
I haven't, but go ahead, fill me in.
Well, she's on Headline News. She's been on there at least 8 to 9 years. She usually covers cases like kids being abducted, parents abusing their children of some sort. She covers a lot of kid things, but she also covers other high-profile crimes. Now, she kept repeating the mugshot of Darren Wilson last night. He had an indentation on his red cheek like somebody slapped him, and he had a reddish feeling on the back of his neck. She said it looked like he had been leaning on his shoulder rest or whatever. So she cited that he didn't look like that. He was in a life-threatening situation where he had to kill somebody. Now,
right.
Nobody knows. Nobody was there. Now, we have two questions left to ask. So we could either answer the question if Darren Wilson's story was true, what happens next? And the other question is, where do we go from here, no matter who was true or false? Now, John, the other reason black people are upset is because there was a grand jury indictment. In order for that to take place, a crime has to be pressed. There was no charges pressed against this cop. It was a closed-door indictment, meaning it was closed to the public. 5 days before the verdict came out, the governor called in the National Guard as a prelude. And then also, it was like smelling a rat. Like they had behind closed door meetings. Nothing was open to the public. I read one article where they said the kind of testimony that was presented was so tedious that the panel or the jury couldn't digest it all. A lot of the material that was presented was one-sided. So I don't know the. And the head of the whole thing was a white guy whose father had been killed by a black several years ago. And he had some kind of limp. I'll try to look up the article, but they said that this person, this DA person, his father had been killed in downtown St. Louis by a black. He had 50 to 90% of his family was in law enforcement. He had a vengeance. And the way that Missouri handles these types of things is always one-sided. So you were right in by saying that there had been a history in that town. Now, consequently, CNN had a special tonight and other nights recently called Black and Blue about police brutality in New York and how Bill Braxton or whatever his name is trying to fix that. There was one black kid who was a college student who had been stopped 93 times in a year by the New York police just because he looked like somebody remotely close to the suspect, like a tall, thin black man. And he had got to the point where he wouldn't even want to go to college anymore because he was stopped every other day by the cops. So, I mean, this is an epidemic of some sorts in this country, but just think for all the cases that we've heard, like Trayvon Martin, this 12-year-old in Cleveland, and Michael Brown, how many other cases are out there of possibly blacks being subdued or a white cop maybe being killed by a black? I mean, statistically, how many cases do we not hear about? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I could totally see that point. And, I mean, you're talking to a 55-year-old man that was handcuffed just for suspicion, just because I was out late at night with a 22-year-old in a car putting water in my radiator, and I'm getting pulled over and given the third degree. They think she's a prostitute when she's a college student, and, you know, we're church people doing gospel music for God. So I can understand. Now, did I feel happy about, you know, being in the back of a cop car and having a light on? And what if we answered the wrong questions? Like, what if our stories didn't line up? And so what's he going to do?
Then you might be
arrested?
Sitting in jail overnight with a false charge.
And we're going, I didn't do anything. He didn't witness anything. He's just coming with an assumption. And because our stories say they didn't match up, would he have the right to arrest me? And I could have made a big thing and said, hey, Sonny, you're here to serve and protect. I pay your salary. You know, I have rights, blah, blah, blah. And he probably would have pushed things to another level. So I kind of look at it this way. I think, in general, it's kind of like the right of way. There's a lot of rights worth dying for. The right of way is not one of them. Like, if a train's coming towards your way, you may be in the right. But I think if you're smart, you just get out of the way. It doesn't matter. If you're dealing with a law enforcement and he's got a gun, you just have to be smart enough to save your own life, even if he's wrong. In defense of Michael Brown and these other people, I don't think they had the maturity or the wisdom or the patience or the spirituality to deal with it. Because you have to be humbled. You have to say, okay, do your thing. I'm going to lay low here. I'm going to live instead of fighting. I also think 10 years from now, probably he'd be a career criminal or hanging out in the streets or dead, you know, doing something else stupid, because that's what people on the streets do. So it's a mixed bag. I would say, you know, you kind of have to, you want power to the people, but the people got to be smarter than this. You know, like burning up your city over this, I don't see where you're going to win. You can bust the cop, but you need the police to, I mean, if you didn't have any police there, can you imagine what they'd be doing there? It's crazy.
Well, I guess like Obama's right in one sense. I mean, he's right in one sense because he doesn't really want this stigma on his reputation. And by saying these are criminal acts, he's right. But to me,
right,
it seems like with that Black and Blue, that powerful CNN documentary that just came out, they usually run those things for about a month. That came out. That Cleveland case was more open and shut in the sense where that 12-year-old was waving a gun, but he was sitting on a swing set. There's still some speculation about whether the cops could have done something else, like tased him. But it was more clear-cut because there were two cops, one kid, and there was also a videotape at that rec center. Now, with Michael Brown, one of the eyewitnesses is dead. They didn't give Dorian Johnson much credence after the grand jury thing started because his tale was the exact opposite of the cops. So obviously one of them is lying. So I think the reason why the looting and stuff is going on is because it's been heated tension since August 9th. You know, and I guess they don't know of any other way to express themselves, but even after burning all those buildings, a bunch of them gathered in front of the Ferguson police station last night just to stand there and silently protest. So not everybody's looting, not every single protester. But let's face it, Ferguson's not looking too pretty these days.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry for both sides. I mean, we don't want to see abuse of power by police. We don't want to see people burning up their own town. That doesn't accomplish anything. Two wrongs don't make a right. I guess in the big picture, standing back, I just think you don't want to, like, I'm speaking if you're an innocent person, you don't want to screw yourself trying to fight the power if you can't win. Like, if a cop pulls you over, just roll with it, you know? In general, most of the times, if you just roll over, you're going to be okay. And I'm not really too partial. People who are committing crime or involved in criminal life and the police abuse them, you know, call it one of those, like, karma type of things. I think if it was, you just don't see these things happening at a church. You know, after church service in the parking lot, the police busting things up and shooting people. It's always someone in the wrong place, you know, doing the wrong stuff. But that being said, I mean, this is a time of Thanksgiving and Christmas is coming. I want to see peace on the earth. And I just think spiritually, they just don't have the answers for this. I think, you know, there's a need for God. And that's kind of the bigger issue. There's a spiritual void. That's why people have all this anger and hate and, you know, controversy going on.
Well, I think some people are contemplative because we drove We drove four clients home across a 350 one-way distance, about 600 to 700 miles total. And it took us 11 hours today, and we dropped off one girl who's about, well, she's in a wheelchair, and she can't walk and cannot talk well. So even her father, at this particular stop, his first question wasn't, "How's my daughter?" He said, "What do you think of all this stuff going on in Ferguson, Missouri?" So even a rural Midwesterner he lives in a small city way north of the St. Paul, Minneapolis, was concerned. And even in St. Paul and Minneapolis, which is a good probably 1,000 miles from St. Louis, Missouri, and Ferguson, there were protests. They blocked a electric train or a bus or something last night in Minneapolis. There were like 30 protesters, and a car ran through the protest crowd and hit a woman, but she's okay. So, I mean, like, from New Jersey to Seattle, there's been demonstrations, is that National Public Radio reported.
Well, you know, here's something that's interesting, just in switching roles. You know, first of all, you know, cops sometimes, they have, you know, decisions against them. Not always, but, you know, sometimes they get a raw deal, right? You know, they're trying to do their best, and they go up before a committee, and they, you know, have a penalty against them, even though they're trying just to do their job. You don't see the police going out the next day and busting up a city or, you know, tearing things or looting things. I kind of thought, what about for 30 days, let the homies, give them guns and let the homies run the city and let the police run on the streets and see, you know, would the police be committing crimes? I don't think so.
No, because that would make them more illegitimate.
What I'm saying is the homies, they're not going to do what's right. They're going to run drugs and bust up the town. So I find it kind of hard to have overwhelming sympathy. But on the other hand, I think people without God just tend to go into anarchy and into chaos. And it's just a sad situation. You know, you kind of wish Martin Luther King was here to kind of show us a peaceful example.
Like, things are at, the reason things are at such a raw, by the way, we only have 10 minutes left, or maybe 8. Things are at the raw, we're in political vitriol season. Our country is at odds. The blacks who are struggling feel disenfranchised.
Right.
The white law-abiding citizens, NPR played like about 50 people with one-line quotes today. It went all the way from an older white woman saying Michael Brown's a thug, he got what he deserved, to a thoughtful white man saying that, you know, Darren Wilson took it too far, he could have readjusted his compass, that type of thing, to
right,
middle of the road. You know, I mean, all these kinds of statements. It went all the way from, like, he's a thug, I'm practically glad he's dead, that's what one lady said, to considerate thoughts, to people on the far left saying stuff like, you know, this could have really been prevented. So it's over and done with. The police have to reassess their approach to criminals is what I'm hearing a lot of talk about. And minorities do get picked on, let's face it. I mean, even blacks are disproportionately 30% to 50% of the prison population. So it's in Wisconsin especially, there's a really high disproportionate number of blacks incarcerated. So I just think this is what I overheard of a young black woman say in Ferguson the other night. She said the justice system never works for them in their eyes. She's talking about the headliner cases like Trayvon Martin, but she said it never works. So how are they supposed to have faith in it?
That's true. I mean, I guess the counterpoint to that would be, let's say, you know, you make more rules, and, you know, the cops should be more lenient and just let it go. And so the next time a guy's robbing a place and he's got a gun and he's running down the street, the cop says, stop. The guy doesn't stop, and the policeman says, okay, keep going, and hit the next person, and I'm not really going to shoot, so, because I'm afraid of getting written up, and I'm afraid for my life. I just, you know, I'm just here to write statistics. And there's, you know, a certain amount of people that say, hey, I'll give you an example. There was a guy who got tired of getting ripped off with his pickup truck. People kept messing with it. So he put a silent alarm on it. And then the next time it sounded, he came out, found the guy breaking into his truck, and he shot him dead. And when the police showed up, he said, hey, the guy came at me, attacked me, it was self-defense. Not a problem. About 2 or 3 years later, same thing happens again. Still had his silent alarm on. Same scenario. And he said, hey, the guy came at me, I shot him dead. This time they pressed charges, and, you know, he had to go through a trial. I don't even know what happened to him. But the point is, I know it's kind of cold, but I sit there and think, I need this guy in my neighborhood. He's taking care of business. The police aren't going to do anything. My dad had a theory, and that is, who needs public police? He said, let's get rent-a-cop. You pay your own cop to patrol your area. He's working for you, and he's dedicated to serving you. Now, I know that leads to corruption because you'll pay the cops and, you know, do a better job than the other guys, but I kind of like this idea. You know, there's kind of a disconnect, and I don't know what the answer is.
In Beverly Hills, they do have paid cops. They have security patrols.
That's true, but I kind of wonder, if you handcuff the police too much, are they going to hesitate to do the job or just let it go? Just like, I'm going to look the other way and let the homies take care of business. That's a tough call. You know, I wouldn't want to be a cop there.
We only have 4 minutes. We have 2 minutes left. I was a police informant in Boyle Heights in East LA. I would every 2 weeks I would write down, this is before the internet was really big, it was around 2001, 2002. I would write down a one-page summary of what was going on in my neighborhood, the names of the criminals, when they left for drug runs. I would also write down, like, if people were carrying weapons, because I lived in Boyle Heights, a mile from the job that we both worked at. I would turn it in. I didn't ask for money. They didn't offer me money. I was a police informant. The way it got started is 10 days after I moved there, I saw a man get shot in a vehicle. The getaway car backed up at least 500 feet on a main intersection on 4th and Hollenbeck. And then they backed up past the park, and then they were screeching, and then they took a hard right and exited. I was the only one who saw the getaway car. I felt bad that I didn't get the plate, so after that I volunteered to be a police informant. So I'm no hero. I'm just Joe Blow. Part of me was interested. Part of me, it gave me, like you say in your previous shows, it gave me power to do stuff like that. The other part of me just wanted to rectify not being able to see. Because when I poked my head out the window that night and that car was screeching, I did see the getaway car, but I didn't have the nerve to go all the way out there to read what was on the license plate. So I was a coward, too. So that's how it was in Boyle Heights.
Here's the question. In that situation, in that environment, were you more fearful of the police? Or were you more fearful of the 20 or 30 guys like Michael Brown or Tavon, you know, Martin walking around in the neighborhood late at night at, you know, 1 in the morning? And the other question would be, if you ask...
Well, I won't have time to answer, John. We only have 30 seconds left to a minute, so why don't you do your... What's your closing statement?
I was going to say, in posing a question, if you ask the average person in Boyle Heights, in the neighborhood you lived in, were the police abusive and unfair? And you know, is the man, are you fighting the man? I think the majority of them would say, yeah, the police are terrible. They're, you know, always, you know, on our case. So I don't know. I think...
Well, in Los Angeles, there's a population problem. They can't go after the small-time thugs. They can only go after the murderers and the people like that. People who do petty theft and stuff probably got away with it easily, but they had to concentrate on the big criminals in East L.A. And East L.A. is a tough neighborhood at night, so... In this case, I had nothing against the cops at all. It was during an era when these Trayvon Martin things weren't highlighted on the news, and I didn't give it a second guess. And maybe I had no business as a white in a Mexican neighborhood even becoming an informant. I could have got killed for it, but I just did it because I saw that murder, and it was in front of my eyes, and I wanted to do something. That was my... closing thoughts, what's yours?
My closing thought is follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's in a